Welcome to the Bruce Poinsett Show. I'm your host, Bruce Poinsett. This show is your bi-weekly news, interviews, and commentary experience, along with the help of my producer, Ito, in the background. And we give you this every second and fourth Wednesday on the Numbers FM at 7 p.m. And you can also catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett, plus exclusive bonus clips on patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. But we begin each show with the news stories you might have missed, but you should keep on your radar. And we do this live on Twitch. So again, follow the Numbers FM, Numbers with a Z, FM on Twitch, so you don't miss an episode. Now, without further ado, the news. Now, the first story that some people have been talking about comes out of Willamette Week. It's titled, Portland Mayoral Aide Outlined Ideas to Eliminate Unsanctioned Camping Across the City. It's by Sophie Peel. So they, mayoral aide Sam Adams, as you may recognize, former Portland mayor, recently put out a memo talking about some ways to deal with the houseless issue in Portland. And here's just an overview from the article of the biggest takeaways. One, the plan is to build 1 to 3 shelters that accommodate up to 3,000 homeless people. Two, place the locations on city-owned land or use eminent domain to use privately owned land. Three, hire unarmed Oregon National Guard security specialists, medical personnel, and graduate students from Portland State University's social work program to help manage the sites. And four, get access to federal dollars by jointly declaring a disaster and have the governor, chair, and mayor invite their West Coast counterparts to join in, making official and simultaneous requests for the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, to declare houselessness a federal emergency, eligible to receive federal funds. Now, it should be noted that Sam Adams has come out and clarified that this is just a memo. He's just putting ideas out there. But a lot of people have been particularly alarmed by the prospect of having National Guard security specialists monitor homeless camps. And in fact, there was a recent op-ed in Street Roots titled "You're Startling Us, Sam," where they really laid into that. But again, this idea of what many have called concentration camps to deal with the homelessness population is, I mean, obviously reminiscent of where you hear the idea of concentration camps, but also, as we've recently got done with the Super Bowl and other events, you have the Olympics going on right now. So it's a time where we often talk about mass displacement of homeless people and removal of homeless people to make way for major events or major city planning. Now, just again, another statement from Sam Adams on this from the Willamette Week article. He writes, quote, I've been told school parents, neighbors, and business owners are gathering evidence and looking for potential plaintiffs and lawyers to sue state, county, and city for failing to enforce camps that violate public sanitation and chronic nuisance rules, Adams wrote. The likelihood of suing the government for failing to comply with public sanitation and chronic nuisance laws is unknown. We will need to consult the government attorneys. If it gets to the point of a pretrial discovery phase, we will all be dealing with public records requests and court proceedings for years. What he's highlighting there is that people are preparing litigation in an effort to, I guess, deal with the homeless problem in their way. And again, this is trying to force the hand to force displacement. But as we look at situations like this, and frankly, in my opinion, scary prospects of, you know, putting our in-house community in effective concentration camps, I think this is really something that should, you know, get your urgency going about dealing with these, you know, coming up with real alternatives and real solutions to these problems. So on to our next story. It's from the Oregonian. It's titled, Oregon Lawmakers Revive Proposal for Stimulus Payments to Low-Income Workers Call for $600 Checks. And specifically in this, our author writes, well, Rep. Andrea Valderrama of Portland, who is co-sponsoring the new bill, said that about 260,000 workers would be eligible. Lawmakers also plan to set aside up to $15 million to provide similar payments for undocumented workers who weren't allowed to claim the earned income tax credit because of their immigration status. Now, first off, when we talk about $600 payments, obviously, it's not enough considering the cost of living right now. It's outrageous in Portland. But we also have to realize that there's going to be huge pushback to even that much. Never mind proposals that have been up to $2,000 a month, as we remember from a couple years ago, of just essentially a proposal of universal basic income for people to deal with this pandemic. Nonetheless, these are solutions, or at least ideas and proposals, for taking care of people in a topsy-turvy economy. And as people are struggling, we have to consider these options. We have to keep our eye on these options when they come up. So this is a slightly positive pivot in the right direction. Let's keep our eyes on it. Next, we have another story from the Oregonian. This is by Lizzie Acker, titled "Oregon Releases First Draft Rules for Therapeutic Psilocybin Program." Now, we're not going to get into a whole rant on mushrooms today, but you know that'll probably happen later in the Bruce Poinsett show. But just a few interesting takeaways from this article that I wanted to share with you. One, quote, "Researchers believe psilocybin could help treat depression, PTSD, and addiction. An Oregon system would allow for consumption of the substance in a therapeutic setting for anyone 21 years or older. No prescription or diagnosis would be required to take part in the program." Another takeaway, quote, "Manufacturers would also be required to steer clear of anything that could possibly be marketed to children, including products in the shape of an animal, vehicle, person, or character." And that, yeah, I'd say obviously that's important. Also, I think of, you know, mushrooms being made to look like gummy bears or something. This seems interesting. But I digress. Finally, last takeaway, the draft rules also outline what kind of training those administering the substance will need to receive, which would include a minimum of 120 hours of instructional time and 40 hours of practicum. There's also a possibility for accelerating training hours that can be given based on students' professional credentialing, prior training and education, or relevant experiences. So again, Oregon has a chance to be on the front lines of psilocybin research and access and engagement. And, you know, this is exciting news. Another thing, keep your eyes on it. Finally, we have a story from Street Roots titled, "Why Is It So Hard to Unionize? Because the Rules Favor Employers," by Piper McDaniel. So we're going to go through a couple, I think, very important passages in this, but again, keep your eyes on it. So first, McDaniels writes, "Most Americans support unions. In 2018, the Economic Policy Institute found that 55% of people surveyed have a favorable opinion of unions, while only 33% saw them in a negative light. Studies also show that many American workers want to be a part of a union. A 2017 survey showed that roughly half of non-managerial workers, 58 million people, would vote to be in a union if they had the opportunity. But that same year, only 50,000 employees were able to secure union status, less than 1% of those who want to be in a union. Union rates in the United States have consistently fallen in the past few decades. In 1983, a fifth of all wage and salary workers were union members. By 2017, that number fell to a record low of 10.7%. While union rates have fallen, wages and worker protections have too. Unionized workers' wages are generally 13.2% higher than their non-union counterparts, and they typically have better benefits and access to health care. Since 1978, around the time when unionizing rights began to erode, CEO compensation has grown 940%, while employee compensation has risen only 12%, and that was before the pandemic. So look at that again, just look at raw numbers, where CEO compensation has risen 940% compared to 12 for employees. So you're wondering, why might unions be important? just some food for thought. But there's another passage, because this is especially pertinent to Oregon. So McDaniels also talks about that a little bit. He writes, "In the meantime, workers press on, and the push for unions seem to be gaining momentum. Amazon workers in Bessemer, Alabama, ultimately voted against unionizing in April last year, but workers in other locations revived the effort and filed for union membership in December. In recent weeks, Starbucks workers gathered unprecedented momentum in unionizing efforts. Following the flagship establishment of a union in Buffalo, branches across the country are taking up the union fight. So far, at least 6 branches in Oregon have announced union drives. In recent years, Oregon workplaces have pushed for workers' rights and succeeded. At Crush, a well-known queer bar in Portland, the staff organized a collective in response to mass layoffs, and employees unionized to protest safety conditions. Other Portland businesses like Voodoo Donuts and Burgerville weathered the toil of organizing and established employee unions, securing them better working conditions and wages." So again, when we talk about this union fight, Oregon is very much at the epicenter, and you can keep track whether it's these big chains like Starbucks or more localized places like Crush, Voodoo, or, you know, somewhere in the middle like Burgerville. The fight is happening here. You can pay attention to it. Please do follow this organizing and stay up on that news. And with that, we wrap up the news. The Bruce Poinsett Show is made possible by the support of members at patreon.com/BrucePoinsett. Patreon is a service that allows you to directly support creators like myself through monthly or annual memberships. Become a member for as little as $3 a month and get access to exclusive bonus clips and live discussions. Check out this clip from the page.
Are you defending the prequels? Where does your defense end, Bruce?
So, you know what? Maybe this might surprise you, but yeah, the whole meal deal. I will defend the prequels, kind of. Again, I also had a disclaimer at the beginning that I would not put money on me if I were betting on this as a viewer, but will I defend the prequels? Yes.
If you enjoy this content and believe in the community I'm trying to build, please support by becoming a member at patreon.com/BrucePoinsett. So welcome back to the Bruce Poinsett Show. In addition to news and interviews, during this B Block segment, we like to give you a little fun while also keeping it informational. And today we got a special segment called the Mayo Report. And we'll just let you see what that's all about.
Ito, you a big Vice news reader?
I've watched their like internet videos than like read their news. But what are you trying to get at here?
Well, Vice News has somehow become my go-to source for just like white nonsense news.
Makes sense. Yes.
I honestly feel like they should sponsor this segment, the Mayo Report. But you know, we'll build to there.
Right.
But yeah, today on Vice News, we got this gem: Ron DeSantis introduced the Stop Woke Act and name dropped MLK.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that is a lot to process. I think I would like to start in what entails the Stop Woke Act here.
I'm glad you asked. So this is just the latest, and for those who aren't familiar with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who's clearly trying to run for president and has just decided, I'm going to go all the way in on all this critical race theory fear-mongering. Mm-hmm. So this is the latest in his efforts. And I want to read the acronym. According to Vice News, alongside students and a prominent right-wing anti-critical race theory activist, DeSantis on Wednesday introduced the Stop the Wrongs to Our Kids and Employees Act.
Wow, okay. That is... kids and employees. This is interesting. You know, you tell history correctly and people get real, real up in arms about it real fast.
Oh, very. I mean, and that's That's the funniest part about it. Like, I was watching a video last night talking about another school board. I should shout out Kim Foster for Harriet, because I really do recommend that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she was talking about how the weird dynamic of these school board discussions is that you have these people who supposedly, like, seem, you know, normal and level-headed up until, like you said, you start mentioning race and racism, and then it turns to get out real quickly.
Very quickly, correct.
I get it, though, just because, like, I grew up in Lake Oswego, Oregon. Those who don't know, you know, nickname Lake No Negro, Oregon, and it earned that nickname. So I'm pretty used to this, where you could be the person who, you know, you see someone at the grocery store, like, hi, hello, you know, what do you think about the Blazers last night? All these, you know, benign,
simple conversations.
Exactly. But you, again, you mention race, you mention racism, and they just turn thrown into these pathological, like, cartoon characters. Without fail. I mean, I remember going to these pickup games, and I had this Malcolm X t-shirt one day. And it's like, guy I've seen, been on a team with countless times or whatever, but sees the t-shirt, it's just like, oh, that was a bad guy, wasn't it? You know, in that way that's just like, where they're trying to be polite, but not. And it's just like, it just sets people off. But at the same time, that's what makes it work, if that makes sense. That because it's packaged, so, you know, you have someone like Ron DeSantis who will come do this press conference, you know, this suit, everything is official. It's the governor. You have these people come to school board meetings and, you know, in a calm voice, they will, you know, tell you that the vaccine is going to turn them into, you know,
dinosaurs.
Like, yeah, dinosaurs, some three-headed beast or something. Right. But they do it politely. They do it as if it's just like a matter of fact.
Right.
And like, it's like we react to that just like as a society. Like, it's normal. It's fine. It's not really a threat, because, you know, the thing that worries me more so than, you know, the people going and like terrorizing school board meetings or city councils and all that is, those are just like, those are the people who are willing to put their faces behind this.
Right.
You always need the, you know, frontline soldiers in any, you know, movement or whatever. But there's also, you know, the quote unquote silent majority. There's people who tell you that they are quote unquote allies who are also not exactly averse to the idea of not talking about race so much.
Of course, yes.
And what you see, especially because most of this, as far as just like the mobilizing of it, is happening in places where there's, you know, not the critical mass or not the big enough amount of people of color to push back, or the big enough amount of just, I guess, progressive justice minded people to push back. And because that's still the majority of the country, or still the majority, at least electorally, every time we watch these maps of big, you know, red swaths of land where like 10 people live. But I'm getting off track. So let me bring it back. Yes. So you have this happening with, you know, little or very quiet pushback in places. And what that tells me is that's consent. That is saying, this is okay. Or, you know, at least like, we are, best case scenario, the, you know, people who consider themselves allies in these places are like, you know, this is bad, but they scare me, so I'm just going to sit here and we're just going to let it happen and see what happens. And I don't hear enough other people complaining, so I guess it can't be that bad, right?
Exactly.
And then, boom, you have policies, because it's not like this is just, you know, people doing press conferences or proposing bills. There actually have been, let me check here, because there's a number, I want to say 9 states
wow
have passed or no, nine others. Yeah, 10 states have passed some kind of legislation banning critical race theory, even though it wasn't being taught in the first place.
Wow.
Which is wild for a variety of reasons, mm-hmm. obviously, but because one, how are you going to attack a thing that doesn't actually exist in your schools? But also, if I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, you're preemptively attacking a thing that would actually be helpful. It'd actually be good for kids to have some of this knowledge, right?
I would say so, 100%.
Let me bring it back to DeSantis, though, because the other part of this, you know, it wouldn't be an attack on critical race theory and racism without quoting Dr. King.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Again, according to the story, you think about what MLK stood for, DeSantis said. He said he didn't want people judged on the color of their skin, but on the content of their character. You listen to some of these people nowadays, they don't talk about that, DeSantis said to applause.
Applause?
Oh, of course, because he was surrounded, you know, by a bunch of fans and other, you know, I call them zealots, but, you know, we'll just call them constituents.
Yes, yes, yes. Supporters.
Maybe this is just me being nitpicky here, but like, if you're going to misappropriate MLK, can you at least pick different quotes?
Right.
It's always the same. Well, Martin Luther King says, don't judge people on the color of their skin, but the content of their character. Like, they never, ever choose a different quote.
Never.
I'm just asking for, like, be creative.
There were other places, like, we've used the same, like, five MLK quotes for the history of time. Like, he said other things.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not going to do this very often, but this is the one thing that, you know, I feel like Donald Trump had going for him is that he was creative. He brought, like, new things and new phrases to the racism. Like, he spiced it up.
He was about his creative racism. I'll give you that 100%.
And, like, I think it was totally an accident because he clearly just says whatever just, like, farts out of his mouth.
Yeah, he just be talking.
But, you know, again, he would spin you a new phrase. He would give you, and I'm pretty sure that's what helped, you know, win the thing. Like, yes, he's, you know, gives a voice to all the people who just want to say this stuff out loud.
Right.
But, you know, he made, in a weird way, he made the white supremacy exciting.
That is a interesting way to put it, but I see what you're saying. He made the white supremacy a little bit more, like, I don't know. He was original about it. He was original about his white supremacy, which means that I guess he was the most, at least when it comes to the political side, he was the most, like, forefront with his white supremacy. He was just, like, actually racist instead of, like, jumping around the racism and all of that. Like, he would have just, if he could have, he would have said slurs live on television.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you hear that cliche that constraints, like, build creativity because you got to work around them and figure it out.
Right.
And, I mean, this is a very long praise by me of Donald Trump. Don't get used to this, people watching this.
I don't even know if I would call this a praise as much as you just acknowledging how he tricked white Americans into voting for him.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'll give DeSantis that too, that he's, you know, because all these politicians are trying to be bootleg Trumps. And it's cartoonish, but for that said, it is real. Like I said, you got 10 states who passed legislation. You
right.
have, I mean, even here, you know, they say Oregon is a liberal bastion. Not really.
No.
It's, you know, we're in Portland, which is kind of a, how would you put it? It's in its own little bubble here. And then there's a lot of, Oregon is very red.
Oregon is very red besides Portland. Even, I would say, going to school, I went to school in Beaverton, which is very close to Portland. In having to deal with attempting to fight for critical race theory, like, it was a difficulty there with school boards I think recently my local school district even had a very racist like person heading the board. So it's like it's kind of everywhere. Like it's very much so like something that they're trying to fight against. They don't want critical race theory in schools, even in places that are so-called liberal.
Yeah, I mean, not even just critical race theory, just literally any mention of race. Exactly. So with that said, what do I prescribe? Because I can, you know, sit here and talk about how Ron DeSantis is a clown.
Right.
And how all these people are just on some goofy stuff, going to meetings, organizing. But, you know, it is a real problem. So first and foremost, support, if not run for a school board. We need progressive candidates out there who aren't afraid to fight back against these people, who aren't afraid to not just fight back because you don't want to be on the defensive, but also push policies like gasp, but push for critical race theory in schools. I'm just going to throw that out there.
It's, oh my God.
I know. Don't tell anybody. It's, you gotta keep this under wraps.
Keep it on the DL.
You know, push for policies, not just critical race theory, but like policies that actually protect the children. Right. Because oftentimes when we do this, we talk about it from a framework of just like educating white people, but you know, there are actual like black, brown children that
are in these classrooms.
Yeah. And they're dealing with stuff both in the curriculum and also just like clearly physical threats to their safety and well-being. Mm-hmm. And we need to dedicate some actual resources to that. And then, you know, if you have the ability to monitor school board meetings, even especially now in these pandemic times where you can do it online and it's easier than ever, do that. Just keep an eye on these things. Assign people. If you're in an organization, I strongly suggest becoming a part of an organization. Assign some people to do it. You can even make it fun. Make it sit at home, have some drinks. I guarantee you will hear some, like, even before this time, you will hear wild things.
Very much so.
It is actually weirdly entertaining. It's kind of a form of reality. I mean, it is reality TV, literally. But yes. You can, trust me, I know it's like, watch the school board when I could do anything else with my day, when I'm done with work, why would I do that? You will be entertained. But then also, lastly, continue to clown these people. I know.
Absolutely.
I know I'm out here trying to give like other tangible, more productive prescriptions, but also make fun of these people in the way they deserve. Like, let's not lie to ourselves. Think about how much time Ron DeSantis actually spent coming up with that acronym. It's like, make sure I say woke, but what? Woke, wrong? Okay, how about, let me put something before that. Stop woke, yes. Stop the wrongs that's it. Our kids, but it's got to be more than that. Our kids and employees. Wrongs. Our kids. Woke. I did it.
Got it.
I'd say he, but he had an assistant or like an intern.
He has a team. We have to understand that like there is a team of people behind this who cleared woke as this acronym for woke. They cleared this. Grown people.
Yeah. A whole team of people had to work on that. And I'm not going to lie. That's hilarious to me. There's no way it's not hilarious to me. It's
very funny.
Like, I'm excited. The Boondocks is supposed to be getting rebooted next year.
Oh, I'm excited.
But also, I'm like, how is it going to work? Like, real life is clearly outpacing satire. What do you do with this? How, by the time you get to like February or March or whenever this comes out, how are you going to be able to satirize this?
When life is already comedy. It truly, yes. Like, this is going to be a difficult. I'm interested to see because, like, there's a lot of jokes. Like we talked about, like we could go on forever, but like the whole Donald Trump era that could come back. Like that was an ongoing internet joke forever. Like, how do you write satire about that now?
Man. So we're going to see. But in the meantime, you know, you've got people saying these things out loud, putting it in writing. And as a journalist, I was taught that, you know, you hold people accountable for these things. In a fair world, I'd feel pretty embarrassed to come outside after doing a press conference about the Stop Woke Act. But that's me personally. And I have the belief that we should all do our part to really make sure people are self-conscious and have some shame.
Agreed.
Over just being this stupid out loud.
Uh-huh.
That's all. This has been the Mayo Report.
BrucePointsett.com is your one-stop shop for everything Bruce Poinsett. You have my services such as freelance writing and editing, creative nonfiction courses, as well as customized writing classes, event facilitation, and digital content creation. Again, go to BrucePointsett.com for a quote and make sure to sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss any news or updates. Welcome back to the Bruce Poinsett Show. Got a special guest in the building with me today. It's Libra Ford, who is running for Clackamas County Commissioner. Libra, how are you doing today?
I am golden. How are you, Bruce? Thank you for having me and thinking about me, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's an exciting time in Oregon politics. And, you know, it's a good opportunity to talk to people running for office. We're trying to make some changes out here. Yeah. Also, you know, you have the, we'll just say, the honor of christening my first interview in the new studio. So, you know.
Even better. That makes it even more special. I love that.
Yeah. So, you know, before we talk about your campaign, I just want to, you know, let both myself and the listeners give them a chance to get to know you a little better. Can you just talk about, you're not originally from Oregon, but when did you move to the state?
Yeah. So I chose Oregon. It was the first place that I chose to live in my adult life. Every other place was because of work, or I was married to the military. And so all of my choices were based on duty stations when I was married to the military. So Oregon was my first.
Just a second. What other places have you stayed in?
Lived in, stayed in. So I've lived in Vermont. I've lived in Massachusetts, overseas. I've lived in North Carolina. I've lived in Arizona. I've lived in California. And my longest stint when I was married to the military was in Hawaii. And I moved here from Hawaii.
Yeah. So what year was that?
2014. I came here for a year. Every 2 weeks, I worked for an international education company. And I knew that this was one of my regions, Oregon. And so I would come here to the Portland office. We had a Portland and an Elkton school district office, which is near Grants Pass. And I would stay for 2 weeks and then go back home. I did that for a year and learned a lot about the school districts here. And then I decided to move here, based on what I learned about the different school districts, in particular North Clackamas School District. I wanted my kids to go to school here. So that's why we came.
I was curious. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? Like, what was it that, I guess, attracted you to North Clackamas?
Oh, man. So their profile, the company that I work for, we were in a couple school districts across the state of Oregon and other school districts outside of the state I also oversaw. But when I looked at profiles and I was working with administration and I was working with different people, North Clackamas kept coming up as an innovative school district. The superintendent's name kept coming up as someone that was really pushing equity in a way that I wasn't hearing in other school districts. And I was excited about it. I was excited about the horizon that I felt they were sitting on. And even though I knew that maybe they hadn't completed a lot of the things that they were trying to do, I knew that the movement was exciting, and it's something that I wanted to be a part of, and I wanted my kids to be a part of. In particular, it was also the geographic area of North Clackamas. It mimicked a lot of what we were living in Hawaii. And so I wanted them to come to something similar. I didn't want it to be such a crazy change that they couldn't understand kind of the climate and the geographic area. Where we lived in Hawaii, very rural. And so I wanted something like that for them, but yet we had access to cities, you know? And so that we felt that this area could do that. And not to mention, they had a great report card. In particular, they had a great graduation rate for kids of color, in particular Black kids. And I was looking at that, and other districts didn't have that. So that's why I picked it.
Yeah, and you know, I really resonate with that idea of just like, there are opportunities here as far as throughout the state in terms of, for underrepresented people. Obviously, it's kind of Oregon's also kind of a fixer-upper project in so many ways. You know, the only state that actually literally banned Black people in its constitution, and that, you know, legacy lives on. But, you know, between some emerging opportunities and, you know, just the nature of the landscape, like, it's also just a beautiful place. So yeah, I completely understand that. But you know, you talk about you're running for Clackamas County Commissioner, but this is not your first foray into politics. You are currently the chair of the North Clackamas School Board, am I correct?
Yes, I am. And you know, that came also from my decision to move here. I, for the first time in my life, chose a place, but the other part of that choice as a Black woman in America, I did not consider anything else except for my kids' future. I did not consider the ramifications of the history of Oregon. I did not consider the fact that there weren't a lot of people here that looked like us. I was joyful of having a choice, and a choice that seemingly looked amazing for my kids' future. And as daunting as the seconds after that were, the moment of just being able to make that decision was freeing for me. I had never made just a decision in isolation without considering the race factor, and I did. Now, you fast forward to the moments after that, and we get here, and I look around and I think, uh-oh, I didn't do all my research. What did I just sign my kids up for? And so I immediately got involved. And so initially started with a principal's council, and then it turned out to be like school district committees. And the deeper I got, the more I realized there was more work to do. And even though I saw opportunity, if I wasn't willing to be a part of the work, the opportunity wouldn't come. And so that's why I decided to run for school board. Again, it was freeing deciding to move here. And I still believe this was the best choice for me and my family. But I also know that there was work that needed to be done. And I'm not one to just talk about it. I'm one to be about it. And so that's why I'm on the board.
Yeah. Can you just talk a little about, you know, just some of the realities of serving on the school board? You know, when most people, you know, if you hear about the school board on the news or a school board on the news right now, it's usually because a bunch of people are storming in saying, you know, waive the COVID mandates, or, you know, we have to ban critical race theory and all this craziness. So yeah, how's the reality of that been in a place like North Clackamas, where, again, you know, you're speaking, I won't say on behalf of a lot of people, but, you know,
yeah, you're that voice.
Yeah. No one signs up for the school board pre-pandemic knowing that we were going to be in the middle of a political charade. Right. I believe that we all signed up because we cared about kids and the future and education. And then throughout the pandemic, it became something very different. And I can honestly say I'm excited to be the leader during this time. One, I believe in technology. I believe in what it can do for our children and our future. I think that we've had wonderful opportunities to investigate technology, and I'm excited to be a part of that. But it's also put at the forefront this conversation about equity and this entire movement of the heart that I think in watching it and being a part of it, I feel it's about time. And so to be in a seat where I get to be on a team and lead a team towards equitable decisions for all, and also decisions that debunk some of the lies that are being told, is exactly what advocacy is about. And I'll never back down from those responsibilities, or even though it's daunting at times, I'll never back down because it's all about the kids and our future. And the biggest thing for me that I've learned in this process is, you know, everyone deserves a voice. I'm willing to listen to everyone, but we must learn how to voice our opinions in a way that leads to action and doesn't lead to more harm. And a lot of the discussions that are happening, a lot of the screaming matches and the infighting at school boards is about harm. And it's just a replica of what this nation has been known for. And many of the people that are screaming CRT needs to leave schools and all these statements that are being made across the nation, unfortunately, they, like many people that are a part of division, are victims of oppression, and they don't even realize it. As a person of color, I see it clear as day. When you are forced to not want to be a part, when you're forced to make division and seemingly design hatred lines, you are being oppressed. And so though I don't agree with them, I think that my leadership, I can find compassion because I understand what oppression is. I know what it looks like. And I can also help us make decisions so that our kids don't feel that, aren't examples of that. And we work towards a different future. But unfortunately, they're being used and they cannot see it. But as a person of color, we do. We know what this is.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was listening to the story out of Wisconsin earlier where someone was trying to, representative was trying to pass a law literally banning, it's got up here, banning words white supremacy, whiteness, equity, inclusivity, multiculturalism, social justice, cultural awareness, patriarchy, abolitionist teaching, and others from being even used in schools. It's wild out here. And it's just, again, between that and this huge anti-vax sentiment, it's just like, you have all these people dedicated to, one, putting children in the way of harm, and then also fundamentally misinforming them. It's just like, we need, you know, if there's ever a moment of urgency, we need it. But to that point though, you know, most people be like, okay, so here's this mountain that I need to climb in the school board. That's enough. But you're also running for Clackamas County Commissioner. So can you just talk about, one, why you also want to take that on at this moment? And then can you just talk about what some of your, what your biggest priorities are going to be if you were to be elected?
Yeah. Why really is centered in advocacy work. It starts off with a walk, and you might have two or three things around you and people around you that you're aware of. But the more you walk, the more you see. And unfortunately, the more that you see, the more you know about what is not working for many. Being on a school board, there's lots of things that we connect to. Cities, we cover a few municipalities, the North Clackamas School District. And we also interact with the county. And so there's things there that we are experiencing that are lacking connectivity. The school board itself and the community of a school board often represent about 20% of a county. That's a significant number of people who are impacted by decisions, by people that often don't think about school districts and the families associated with them. So the more I walk, the more I realize I need to step into other areas, take the knowledge that I've gained from being on a school board and bring that forth so that we can all, as livers in this community, experience this community in a way that makes sense to us and doesn't forget any of us and doesn't miss opportunities to connect with communities that are often forgotten. So that's why I'm running. Some of the things that are important to me in terms of being on a county commission is reform. I don't believe that currently our county commission represents everyone. We have a rural, suburban, and urban community, yet we don't have districting on our commission. So there are many people in this county who don't feel like they're being heard. So that is a priority for me, to make sure that voices are heard. I've always been an advocate for those that are less heard. And it doesn't always have to be the inequities that most people think I only stand for. I stand for all inequities. I will always stand against them. Because what I know about inequities is, inequities for some are just practice for the rest of us. And so if you feel like it's not you today, just wait a couple days. You'll feel the pressure. So districting is important to me on the county commission, as well as tax reform. I have some economists that have been in my ears. We've done some research. There's another way for us to tax our county where people don't feel like they're being nickel and dimed. And we can also get everything we need done that coordinates all of our systems, the city and the county and the school boards that are a part of this county. And then, of course, accountability. We have a lot of infighting happening now. I don't believe that that's acceptable, and it doesn't get the work done. And so we need to look at our accountability of our commissioners and reassess policies around that so that we can get work done and not be stuck with people that have character flaws that interrupt business movement. So all of those things are important to me, as well as leadership. And of course, the most important element is the structure, the infrastructure of our service community. There's a lot of talk in our community about building units for our houseless, transportation for our transportation deserts. But in all of those discussions, there's no discussion around wraparound services for those that are displaced when you do those things. You cannot allow a government alone to do that. There needs to be an infrastructure that brings in experts, nonprofits that do this work well. I've been a part of those movements in other counties. I'd love to see that happen here. As a person that was houseless in Clackamas County, I know what it's like to not have equitable access to services, as well as reduce barriers to services. So that infrastructure needs to be built, and a big part of my hope in the seat for Clackamas County Commission. And last but not least is you, every single person. This is a person by person campaign for me. I'm not one to gather 100 people. One, it's a pandemic, but two, I want to meet people. I want to hear what their experience is. I want to take that with me to the seat so that every decision is rooted in every single person, not just rooted in my small circle or riches that may have paved this way. Everybody deserves a voice at that table, and I want to make sure that that happens.
Yeah, so getting back to advocacy, because you were recently at a student-led protest calling for the resignation of someone who could be your fellow commissioner, Mark Scholl, if you're to be elected. So I think a lot of people might look at that as a particularly risky move for someone running for commission you know, especially in a place like Oregon. But can you just talk about why that was so important to you?
Oh, man. So youth are very important to me. And a lot of times as adults, I think we don't give them enough space to be their full selves. So the first thing that caught my eye was student-led. So anytime I see that, I definitely have a soft spot for that. And I want to support any student that or any youth that has an idea for our future, because it's their future and they got to live it. Risky to say that I want Marshall recalled, possibly. I think that we have a lot of dog whistle racists in many political seats. I don't believe that he's a dog whistle racist. And I have a problem with all races, but I, in particular, I have a problem with those that are that feel emboldened enough to say things that are harmful and not helpful for the movement of this county. I don't feel that his words represent me. I don't feel that his words represent this county. This is a beautiful place. And there's so many people who use visits to this county to make memories with their family. There are people who live here and they make memories with their family. And there's many more in the future that we don't know of. And we cannot allow anyone to design a narrative that everyone is not welcome. Everyone deserves to feel valued here. And I don't stand for anyone who doesn't understand that that is unacceptable. So if I have an opportunity to stand next to him, to talk next to him, to work with him, will I be able to do that? Absolutely. But I will also be clear that I do not accept words of hate. I do not accept inaction from people that are less than helpful. And I do not accept any human being that cannot accept difference in this county.
Yeah. So, yeah, Libra, thanks again for taking the time to tell us a little bit more about your campaign today.
Absolutely.
So first off, when is the election and how can people, if they want to, you know, get involved or learn more about your campaign, where should they go?
Election is May 17th. It's a down ballot. So I tell everyone, just keep moving on the page, flip it over until you see my name. Don't stop. It's definitely a tough race, right? Because lots of people will stop. They see measures and they're like, no, thanks. I don't understand. But do your research and do that down ballot voting. It's important. It's what will make your experience here great or greater. So May 17th is that. And then to support, we have lots of volunteer opportunities. You can go to my website, www.libra4clackamascounty.com. And we'd be happy to have you join the squad.
Great. Thank you, Libra. And yeah, enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Thank you, Bruce.
This has been the Bruce Poinsett Show. Make sure to catch us every second and fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM, as well as on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett. And for exclusive clips, go to patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett and become a member. In the meantime, hey, Black people, trust me, it won't hurt. See you next week.